Will you pray with me? Holy One, we are here in your presence, and I humbly ask that you move through us, you open our hearts, our minds, our whole selves to experience and hear your message to us today. May the words of my mouth, the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. In our story today, Peter is sinking and he cries out, Lord, save me. What does it mean to be sinking? We use the word sinking to describe many things. You can sink into a deep sleep. The setting sun sinks into the horizon. The foundation of a house can sink lower into the earth. Bad news sinks in. You get a sinking feeling in your stomach. You can sink further and further into debt. You can crumble slowly, which might sound like the downward trill of the organ, like an exhausted runner sinking to the ground. What does that feel like? To be sinking. Perhaps it feels very sudden, like when an elevator drops, lurches, or a roller coaster falls, feeling like the rug has been pulled out from under you or the bottom has dropped out. You feel it in your stomach plunging down. It hits you like you've been sucker punched, the wind knocked out of you. You're going down. Or perhaps it feels slow. Like sinking in quicksand, slowly, one body part at a time, until the sand is at your knees, and then your waist, and then your chest, and before you know it, it's at your neck. Psalm 69 sounds like that, when it says, Save me, O God, the waters have come up to my neck. I sink in deep mire where there is no foothold. In quicksand, there's no foothold. No matter how hard you try to struggle free, to lift yourself up, to help yourself, you can't. That makes you just sink further down. Save me, oh God, I'm up to my neck. There's movement in sinking. There's down. There's fast, there's slow. I like to try to use my body to understand things sometimes. There's a powerful truth. And this week I've been doing a movement study on sinking. What is this feeling? I've also been doing reading recently on Martha Graham, encountering her in one of my classes, and her basic movement of contraction. It's this movement of your stomach kind of contracting, your belly button is pushed against the back wall of your spine, and your body is hollowed. That's the body caving in on itself. It's part of the natural body's movement. Martha Graham explores this in her dances that explore the human psyche and the human experience, this feeling of sinking. I've been moving to this piece of music by Jem, who is a Welsh young woman, singer-songwriter, not to be confused with the late 80s cartoon Jem and the Holograms. And in this song by Jem, she's becoming more and more submerged by her own mind, by her thoughts, this constant monologue that keeps playing, that's negative, that, you know, that she can't control. So I'd like to share a piece of my movement study. It's just a study. Movements are kind of set, but it's really things that I've been exploring. I'd like to share a piece of it with you.
Stop.
She keeps going. The lyrics of the last verse say, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the dumbest of them all?" Sinking. Insecurities keep growing. Wasted energies are flowing. Anger, pain, and sadness beckon. Panic sets in a second. Beware, it's just your mind. You can stop at any time. Can you stop it any time? Can you stop yourself from sinking? I'm not so sure. I think that's why she keeps singing, save me, over and over. She's crying out, she's asking for help. She's singing to God. Crying out looks like a lot of different ways. Sometimes it's crying, sometimes it's laughing hysterically. But to be at the point in which you would rise up and say, save me, I think that's the natural response to sinking. It's a realization you can't do it on your own. What's happening is out of your control. Need a greater help. Lord, save me. Have you ever felt this, like you were sinking? Maybe it happened when you heard bad news of a diagnosis or an unexpected tragic death or a death you expected. Your stomach dropped. You felt like the floor had dropped out and you could have sunk down to the ground. Or maybe it's looking at your bank account and you just can't believe how quickly the numbers are declining and your heart and your sinks with your balance. Or maybe it's as you face the consequences of a decision you've made or that someone else has made, and you feel the fear and anxiety in the pit of your stomach. You fear that you'll just keep slowly sinking deeper and deeper, powerless to stop the rising chaos, no foothold to be found in the mire. I want to invite you to try the contraction movement. Just at your seats. You can move at your own comfort level, aware of your own body. Try not to hit your neighbor. It's really almost as simple as breathing in and out, and you're welcome to join or not join as you're comfortable. So first, take a deep breath in. As you breathe out, feel your belly button pressing toward your spine, rounding your body into a hollow C shape. Your shoulders can move forward, your arms can follow. Breathe in and release, expanding your stomach and opening your chest. Again, breathe out, feel the contraction. Your body's deflating and hollowing. Breathe in and release. Fill up and expand. Once more, feel the feeling of exhalation being punched in the stomach. Your belly button goes back. And then inhale and expand. This last time, reach one of your arms up if you can, reaching for help, crying out, save me. Okay, you can relax. Shake it out a little bit. Thank you for trying that with me. We can feel it in our bodies. Whether it's Martha Graham's contraction or whether it's something else, we feel when we feel like we're sinking. We experience it in our bodies. But we don't always know what to do with it. We want to know why. So what about Peter? Why was he sinking? Some would look to Jesus' question to Peter after he scoops him up, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" Okay, if that's it, then he sank because he didn't have enough faith, because he doubted, because when he saw the storm and the waves crashing against him, the spray stinging his face, that he took his eyes off Jesus, that he wavered, that he didn't have enough. No. No, I don't buy that. I think there's something much more interesting happening here and more relevant. The pivotal moment for Peter was not when he was walking on the water and suddenly took his eyes off Jesus, when his certainty wavered. No, the pivotal moment was previously, when Peter insisted on taking it too far. He was uncomfortable with the incredible God moment that had just happened. When the disciples in the boat see Jesus walking on the sea, He's doing something people don't do. People can't do that. Walking on the sea was a cultural storytelling code for conquering chaos, which it was known that only the deity could do. And as Jesus appears walking on the sea, he says, "It is I," in Greek, ego eimi, or I am. The same thing that a voice in another story had said to Moses through a burning bush, I am. In the midst of this chaos and storm, the disciples, they were facing it alone without their leader. God showed up. Jesus, the one who Matthew calls Emmanuel, God with us, suddenly shows up, doing something only God could do. And in the face of this threatening storm, feeling panic and fear, Peter was given the very presence of God amongst his friends and community. And they were offered a word of courage. I'm here. I'm with you in the storm. You don't have to fear the chaos. But for Peter, it wasn't enough. Does God's presence sometimes feel like not enough for you? Peter needed to prove something. He was uncomfortable with the impossibility of the presence of God. He needed a different explanation. He had just seen this amazing demonstration, but surely there was another better explanation. Something that fit into his worldview, where people don't do that. Rather than just calling it a God thing, don't we prefer to look for a better explanation that fits our worldview? Peter figured there is a perfectly reasonable explanation. Or, if not, if this was really happening, he needed to get a piece of it. If Jesus really was walking on the sea, Peter wanted to do it too. He wanted to defy the realm of possibility. He wanted the supernatural power for himself. Wouldn't that be great? If whenever we felt God's presence, we could insist on some supernatural power for our own use. I'm afraid. I can't do it alone. I need you, God. I'm here. Wow. You're actually here. That's great. Okay, will you erase my debt? Will you make my cancer disappear? Will you give me an answer? Will you dissolve 25 pounds? Will you miraculously solve all my problems? Will you command me to walk on water? If you're God, will you? Will you? Will you? Either way, Peter wasn't satisfied with just the presence of God. It wasn't just that he took his eyes off Jesus, but that he insisted on trying to walk on the sea in the first place. After he got out of the boat, leaving the rest of his friends, bypassing the moment with God, testing the limits, then he began to sink. And he felt the panic and the dread, the sudden realization and the slow descent. And with all he had, he cried out to God, "Lord, save me." He put his trust in God. And God responds to Peter's need. But it's interesting because Jesus doesn't just reach out and catch Peter, but he also asks that question. "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" Why did Jesus ask that question? That really bothered me. It seemed mean. Like rubbing little salt in that wound. Like someone telling you, "I told you so," when you've made a mistake and you're already feeling terrible about it. But Jesus isn't being extra accusatory here. No, it's a gentle rebuke. When he says, "You have little faith," the phrase in the Gospel of Matthew that Jesus uses repeatedly toward his disciples is, "You have little faith." How interesting that the people, the followers, Christian people, might be people of little faith. The term little faith is about a mixture of courage and anxiety, of trust and doubt, that mixture which is always an ingredient of Christian existence. When he uses it for Peter here, he's showing Peter as the typical disciple. Just like you and me, Peter is representative of us, of anyone who's trying to follow Christ, who is trying to live simply, live justly, be in community, show mercy and love. And another cool thing, even the word for doubt is different of what we think of when we hear doubt. It's a rarely used form of the word for doubt, distazo, which talks not about skepticism, but about vacillation. Karen has preached before that doubt is not the opposite of faith, but perhaps certainty is the opposite of faith. I definitely agree with that, and I think that faith and doubt are two sides of the same coin. And then I love this image of vacillation as doubt. To fluctuate, to waver, to hesitate, to go back and forth between courage and anxiety, between trust and doubt. Why did you doubt? It's a rhetorical question. It's not answered. It's not prescriptive. We've just seen it's not saying, if you have a little more faith, if it's strong and unwavering, then you can do supernatural things like walk on water. No. Rather, it's descriptive. It acts powerfully to name the reality of Christian faith and life. It names the fact that we do vacillate. The Christian existence, the faith of real people, is a constant mix of courage and anxiety, trust and doubt. We experience God amidst the chaos and storm of our life. We experience doubt as part of our faith. In fact, doubt can sometimes lead to deeper faith. Embracing our questions, experiencing doubt can bring us to new dimensions of the active, alive, trusting faith to which Christ calls us. A bit of uncertainty is a big part of the Christian existence. If Peter hadn't vacillated and tested Jesus in the first place, would he have come to the point where he reached out and trusted? I think what is the most excellent news, good news, in this story is that our God is responsive. At all points in the story, Jesus is responding to the needs of his disciples. After the disciples had battled all night in this storm, Jesus appears and mediates God's presence powerfully. When this terrifies them, he assures them, saying, "Take heart, have courage, it's just me." When Peter insists on trying it himself, he says, "Okay, you need to try it, try it." When Peter begins to sink, Jesus reaches out and catches him. God doesn't withhold love and help just because we have little faith, which includes doubt and anxiety. God doesn't say, "Nope, sorry, you did it wrong. Shouldn't have tested me. No soup for you." No. Our God, when we cry out, hears and responds with abundant, steadfast love, as we heard the psalmist affirm. This isn't a new thing. People have been experiencing sinking and crying out, "Save me," to God since the time of the ancient Hebrew song book came out, probably before. We sink, we cry out, and we believe God responds. And isn't it interesting that when Jesus does reach out and catch Peter, he doesn't give him a second chance to walk on the sea. He doesn't say, "All right, this time you're going to focus, keep your eyes here, and you're going to do it." No, he leads him back to the boat, back to the community, the rest of the disciples. And then the wind stops. When we experience, like Peter, God's amazing presence, Perhaps even the experience of being reached out and caught by someone when we are sinking. When we experience this, we're not being saved in this manner in order to keep on going our own way. No, like Peter, we are being led back to the boat, back to the community of God's people, to the place where God is experienced, where real people, first Jesus, and then all of us, all of the body of Christ, can mediate to each other God's loving presence. So when we find ourselves in the midst of the storm, in the midst of chaos, when we feel like we are sinking, I think the exactly right thing to do is to cry out to God, "Save me."